BBC Radio Berkshire. Bill Buckley here, and if it's just gone 12 on a Saturday, it must be time to talk technology and gadgets with the gadget detective himself, Fevzi Turkalp. Hello, Fevzi.
Good afternoon.
Very nice to have you back with us. If anybody would like to ask you a question, they can send us a text. Would be ideal. 81333, starting with the word box. Any tech playing you up at the moment? We're starting with, and we're doing quite a lot on, actually, YouTube this week. Why so?
Yes, excuse me. YouTube has made the decision to block a lot of content from the QAnon group or structure. So QAnon, as for those that don't know, is a sort of a group of people who believe in particular types of conspiracy theory, and most people believe that they're balmy, have no basis in truth, and are harmful. And in particular, there is a concern that some of these conspiracy theories are leading people to take violent action against individuals or groups of people. Mm. So it's all, you know, American and you know, to do with their politics, I guess. But it's quite interesting because there's this debate about how you deal with that. Should you allow freedom of speech? And particularly in America, of course, it's a constitutional right.
Yeah, yeah.
But on the other hand, these platforms and, you know, Twitter and Facebook have already taken similar steps. So you know, Google with YouTube is sort of playing catch up in a way. There are limits on free speech, and these are platforms provided by private companies. And just as, you know, you get a newspaper group that might choose what to publish and what not to publish, then, you know, a private company could arguably do the same. The people who believe in these theories are saying, no, we should be allowed to express our views. But some of it is tantamount to incitement to violence, and there are laws against that sort of thing.
It's a fascinating and huge subject in a sense, isn't it? Because as you mentioned newspapers there, and we've always completely accepted that you can buy a left-wing newspaper and they'll give you the story from a left-wing perspective and try to persuade you to some extent that that's the way to do it. And then you'll see the same story in the right-wing equivalent and it'll be the opposite. And then we have television and radio, which are very strictly monitored to be absolutely fair down the middle. Then we've got this new thing that comes along, the internet. And we're still really trying to fathom our way through it, I think, a bit,
And it's really interesting. The politics of this is fascinating because the companies that run these platforms say we are no more responsible for what appears on our platforms than BT is responsible for what's said over its copper wires. That's clearly not true. On the other hand, they're not simply a publisher who completely controls what is on their platform. Mm. I think what they're trying to do is take some control. I mean, they always do this. I mean, you know, anyone who tries to upload, you know, forgive me, but child porn images, for example, will not get very far with that on these platforms, and quite rightly so. So, but it is interesting. So should you go the censorship route, or should you do what Finland is doing, which is to say fake news, or as we used to call it, misinformation, is actually like a disease and should be treated like a disease in that it can be vaccinated against. Now, how do you vaccinate your population against fake news? What they do in Finland is that they educate people on how to think critically and how to spot fake news. Now, that doesn't mean they tell them what to believe. They don't. They give them the tools, which are rather similar to a journalist's training about trying to, you know, find if there's another independent source. What is the veracity of that source? Is that image that's provided in there genuine, and has it, in fact, been reappropriated from a story from 5 years earlier or something like mm-hmm. that? Now, the idea is if you can actually alert enough people and give them the basic training within a population, that fake news dies out, just rather like a virus may not be able to spread sufficiently. The fake news R number goes below one, and the fake news dies out. So that's an interesting approach. I think it has to be a joint approach, actually. I think we should be educated more, and it should start in schools. But I also think that these companies are responsible for what's on their platform, and if they don't take these steps, then, you know, as corporations and individuals within corporations, they may be held responsible.
Yeah. What's the situation been so far with you? You mentioned that other platforms are ahead of YouTube on this. I mean, have organisations like QAnon meekly accepted that their wings have got to be clipped a bit, or are there law cases pending, or what?
No, well, so QAnon is kind of a nebulous entity. I'm not sure that it's quite right to call it an organisation, but it's certainly sort of a sort of nebulous group of individuals. I'm not aware of there have been. I was going to use a word. They have been moaning about it, and they're not at all happy. And there have been moves to try and set up, for example, a right-wing equivalent to Twitter, which is interesting because then they're going down the newspaper route, and sort of Twitter is held to be left. The problem that they've got is that when they try and set up an alternative platform, that not as many people see it, and all they're doing is talking to themselves, whereas a huge number of people have Twitter and Facebook accounts and so forth. The companies are acting as well because they fear that they're going to get regulated and broken up and all the rest of it. So they're trying to be responsible. I think also the other thing I would say is these companies can't really regulate themselves. And just in the way that, Press Complaints Committee and so forth, it isn't really, fit for purpose. I think it's time to start actually having a regulator, rather like Ofcom. In fact, you could widen the remit of Ofcom to actually deal with how what is published on those platforms impacts the UK. It's complicated because these are global platforms, but a good number of their users are in the UK and are impacted. And we already have laws, for example, if you think about paedophilia laws, we have laws in this country that prevent UK citizens from going abroad and committing those acts, even though they're in another jurisdiction. So it is possible to actually create a legal framework, and I would say we'd be doing the companies a favour by having an independent regulator and take the responsibility away from them ultimately for policing themselves.
Will you promise me, Fevzi, that if that independent regulator is set up, or if one of the existing regulators' parameters are widened, you will put yourself forward to be on it? Because my worry is that we'll end up with very well-meaning people, perhaps a bit like me, who only really understand the basics of this world and need to know so much more about it, like people like you.
To be honest, these are very difficult questions, and the morality and ethical decisions always lag behind technology, and we saw it in reproductive medicine. We're still grappling with the ethics of what followed from test tube babies and so forth, and now we have the possibility of creating a child with three parents, and what are the ethical implications of that? And the technology leaps ahead, be it reproductive or internet technology, and the ethical consideration necessarily lags well behind it, and that's always going to be a problem.
I haven't heard you say, yes, Bill, I'll put myself forward yet.
My CV is already in, actually. I didn't want to say that.
Oh, there we are then. Well, now we're running way behind, but that was definitely worth hearing. We'll have to go like the clappers for part two. Fevzi Turkalp, the gadget detective, is here. Let's get on to some of the tech that he wants to bring to your attention. Still with Google, Google Pixel 4a 5G and Google Pixel 5.
Right. So on Wednesday, Google announced two new handsets. So these are mobile phones, smartphones, and Google make their own version. So they make Android that's loaded onto, many manufacturers' phones, but they also make their own phones and put Android on their own phones. And there are advantages to having a Google phone, and it is that you get a version of Android called stock Android. That means it's pure Android without all the guff that some of the other manufacturers put on top to try and differentiate themselves, and often isn't useful and slows down the phone. It also has the benefit that you get a guarantee of operating system updates for a number of years. So sometimes you buy an Android phone and you may only get updates for like 1 year, sometimes even no updates. Here you'll get more than that. I think you probably get at least 3 years of updates. And
is there any downside to it? Because otherwise, why are they not dominating the market?
Well, they don't want to, because what Google want to do is, make money and collect data using the Android operating system. And the way that they'll best do that is to put it on everyone else's handsets.
I see.
So essentially everyone except Apple, and they benefit hugely because their apps are then loaded and they get data, and in the end they're all about the data. I don't think they really look to make money out of it. Now, in the past, these handsets, the Google Pixel handsets, were sort of the creme de la creme. But now it's quite interesting. They've kind of priced them at $599 for the Pixel 5 and $499 for the 4a 5G version. they're sort of more mid-range pricing, because top-end handsets cost £1,000 plus these days. You know, you can pay £1,400 for one of the new iPhones, for example. So what are the differences between them? They're actually quite similar phones, and there's only £100 between them. If you get both of them have got Hold for Me. Do you remember we discussed Hold for Me the other week about how when you're put on hold, the artificial intelligence in the phone will hold for you, so you can be off doing other things. And then when someone answers, they alert you and tell the person that's answered that you're coming to the phone.
And
they do that very smartly, and that's a really good feature. Both these handsets have that. The Pixel 5 has got a 90 hertz screen. That means it refreshes faster. That means it's a more fluid motion. So when you're sort of scrolling or doing anything with a lot of movement on the screen, it's far more fluid. So that's a good thing. The battery life on the 5 is better than on the 4. The 5 does something called reverse wireless charging. So we know about wireless charging, where you can charge up your phone, you know, without plugging a wire into it. The 5 does reverse wireless charging. Let's say you've got wireless headphones, earbuds, and they're running out of juice. Your phone can act as a wireless charger for the earbuds. Or let's say you're out for a meal or whatever with a friend and their phone's going to die. You can actually wirelessly charge their phone from your phone.
So it's
rather good. The 5's got slightly more RAM in it, so it should be able to run more applications at one time. And it's also got better waterproofing and dust resistance as well. So those are the differences. If you want a headphone socket, the 4A 5G is your individual, because the 5 has done away with the headphone socket. You have to use wireless headphones with it. But two excellent phones, and I feel that actually the fact that they're sort of £500 and £600 respectively is a reflection of actually we're living in COVID days, and maybe we don't want to be launching £1,000 phones. And I think Google has, I mean, I haven't said this, but my sense is that they're kind of receptive to that, and try to keep it to the features that people really need without putting in the more esoteric features that are not needed but would bump up the price.
Very interesting. So I suppose we're going to have two scores out of five, are we, as we've got two products?
Well, actually they're both 4 out of 5 for me, because £100 cheaper, and the other one's got better battery life, a more fluid screen, more RAM inside it, and water and dust resistance, and the reverse charging. So for me, you know, being more, sort of a bit more ambitious with what I do with my phone, I'd personally go for the 5. But, you know, that £100 could make a big difference to some people, and has the benefit of a headphone socket and ever such a slightly bigger screen on the 4A 5G, strangely enough.
I think these absolute basic things like screen size, you know, and battery life, I think they're way more important than perhaps manufacturers realise when they're doing all their clever stuff. This is what really matters to people in everyday life, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So they had other sort of esoteric features in the past, like when you used to go for your phone, it would detect that you were reaching for your phone and switch itself on milliseconds beforehand. That's kind of really clever, but I don't think it's a game changer.
Really?
No, not really. But so I think that these are really well-priced phones, and, you know, obviously in time you might actually get them a bit less than these list prices. They are just announced on Wednesday. I think they're up for pre-order at the moment. I've had these phones on test for a while, but we weren't actually allowed to say anything about it until last Wednesday because it was under embargo. But I think they're a big deal, and I think I like the fact that they've taken a sort of real-world approach and said, what do people really value, what should they pay for, and what shouldn't they be forced to pay for?
We have so little time left. Do you want to quickly do prototype agricultural robots?
Yeah.
Go on then,
in a minute
if you can.
Right, Google reveals mineral crop inspecting robots. So there's these giant robots that are sort of like in the shape of a small letter N that go through the fields and inspect the farmers' crops. And what they're trying to do is collect data on the crops, like how big is the bean, how big is the leaf, how tall is the plant, for almost counting every bean in the place or pea or whatever it is, and they're trying to work out how plants respond to nutrients in the soil and weather conditions and so forth. And they're using what's called big data, artificial intelligence, loads of data being crunched by computers gathered by these robots, and the idea is that they will improve yields. It's quite incredible. We're now solving problems that we had no chance of solving before, because they were just too complicated. And now computers and AI algorithms with this huge amount of data collected by these robots will, I'm confident, improve crop yields.
Well, having started with people trying to flood us with misinformation and cause trouble, how very nice to end on that positive side of modern life. And we shall do it in 7 days' time then, Fevzi.
Yes.
Great. Thank you so much. That was Fevzi Turkalp. He is the Gadget Detective.